How to do, buckaroos. Welcome to the Mac Observer's Daily Observations Podcast. It is Friday at long last, August 2nd, 2019. I'm your host, Kelly Gamont. With me today, I have John Martellaro. Hi, John.
Good morning, Kelly.
Also with me today, I have the, how do I introduce you? The lovely and talented Adam Christensen. Hi, Adam.
Thank you. That works.
Yeah. You're not here all that much, so I'm really excited to have you on the show.
I am happy to be able to jump in.
Excellent. We have some stuff to talk about, and the first thing we have to talk about is the S-Lady. Which is sort of funny because I was told by a couple of people over the weekend that it was really entertaining, that's how I say it, because I don't want to trigger everybody's phones. So here's the deal. Apple has people who listen to the things that you say to her when you talk to Siri, and somehow that information became attention getting again. It's not like it was secret, but it became attention getting again. And it's called grading. They call it the Siri grading program. And that way it helps tune Siri. So they can find out if it was accidentally triggered or if you asked something and it failed. Like, they can do something to make that better or at least give a creative reply or something like that. And so in so doing, they can do things to make her better. As you might remember, when you got a 4S back in the day and you first tried to use your assistant for anything, there wasn't a whole lot that she could do. And now she can do lots more. Is it perfection? No. But part of how it got to be dramatically better was that there were people listening who were doing some of this stuff. And Apple, like I said, at some point, something prompted this to get another round of attention, and Apple has said that at the moment it is suspending that program. And eventually what's going to happen is there will be a toggle within iOS so that you can decide whether or not you want your information to be sent to be subject to this grading process. So that's where we're at. And Adam, what's your stance on this?
I kind of, when I heard the story about them sort of suspending, or I guess it's now pausing, I think I had originally heard it was like they were going to suspend the program while they reviewed it and blah, blah, blah. My immediate reaction was, oh my gosh, like that felt like in some way vindicating the original story that sort of broke that, hey, Apple's doing this secret thing where they're sending your voice recordings, your Siri voice recordings to a contractor, and they're listening to them and they're hearing potentially really private or compromising things like medical information or, you know, things of that some people might not want other people hearing.
Yes.
And I mean, the result of it is Apple is doing this, I think, in 1% of the cases. And again, it's all anonymized. There was an allegation in the story because there was a whistleblower, and I'm sorry, I can't remember the source that this came out of, but off the top of my head, but you know, that was alleging that there was private data that was being included, like identifiable data. That's not the case. Apple has vehemently denied that. But I guess when I heard that they were suspending the program, my immediate reaction was like, oh my gosh, like, why are they admitting that they were doing anything wrong here? Because my general opinion is that the one failure that they failed to do is they did not disclose, like, they disclose in the policies that, yeah, we're analyzing this data from time to time. What they don't disclose currently is that humans might be doing it. And I guess there was a general assumption by a lot of people that it was just computers, and people were okay with that. But the minute that everybody realized, oh, there's humans, that was where the problem was. And so it felt like, oh, Apple's admitting that they were like secretly trying to hide something here. Like, it felt like by saying this, they're saying we were doing something wrong.
Right.
to a certain degree. And I just don't, I don't agree with that. I agree with what they're doing moving forward. Like this idea that, hey, we're going to pause this. We're going to reevaluate how we're doing it. And we're now going to give the users control. This is stuff they should have probably done from the very beginning. And that mm-hmm. is where I think they screwed up on this. It's just like, be more transparent. Right?
Right.
And give people the option to opt out. And ideally, really, you should think they should give them the option to opt in. I guess my only dilemma on that is that will affect how they roll it out. Because I imagine if it's an opt-in program, we're going to have some sort of like pop-up box when we upgrade the software that says, would you like to opt into this? You know, and here's all the reasons why you should. Whereas if it's the other way around, they could just add a setting and then tell people, hey, if you don't like this, you can go turn this setting off.
Right.
You know, I think for being upfront and being Apple, I'm concerned about your privacy. It should be the former.
Yeah, it should be part
of what they do.
Along the same lines as that, like data and privacy screen that we get as part of the setup process now.
Right.
Like, I feel like it should be. Yeah. Like, you know, as part of the Siri, you know, when they say, do you want to turn it on? Like the follow up question there, like maybe there's two questions there or a second screen or something that says, you know, we would like to be able to use, you know, occasionally use. And here's
it'll be the marketing version. It'll be
right.
Would you like us to help? Would you like to help us make Siri better?
Even better. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think part of the problem, Adam, is that there's this shoot from the hip logic mentality that doesn't go very deep into analysis. And so Apple sometimes gets driven into doing the politically correct thing, even though, as you say, there was no guilt.
Yeah, it didn't feel. But now I say that. But when I talked about this with my wife, she was like, "Yeah, I don't like that." And you know, even when I stressed, you know, there's very little they could do to identify you. But then, I mean, there are points. Like if the accidental recorded conversation was me, you know, saying my kids' names or saying my address, trying to get directions, or there could be in those recordings identifiable information. And if the content is embarrassing or private. Yeah, maybe you don't want somebody listening to that. So I can see the flip. I got to see the flip side of it too. You know, I thought, well, it's anonymized. You know, who cares if probably the recordings they have of me is when Siri wasn't working, and then I went off on a long expletive rant at her. Right.
Yes, I was going to say, like, yeah, lots of people. You know, a lot of the recordings they have. You know, it's just going to be people swearing at her. You know. Yeah.
But without context, you know, with me, maybe someone could recognize my voice because I do a podcast. But,
right.
You know, like the average person, like listening to a rando conversation seems pretty benign to me. But, you know, when I talk to somebody that doesn't have the tech perspective, they're like, yeah, that just feels bad. I don't like that idea. And I would have liked to have known that. So I think that's the point. Right.
Yeah. And I'm glad the adjustment is being made. I'm with you that this should have been a little more obvious, I guess.
Yeah, transparency is. Yeah. I think that's really what most people want when it comes to their data and their privacy. They just like, we want to know what you're doing with this, why you need it, and how you're doing it, and we want the option to opt out.
Mm-hmm. And related to this, slightly, in that. Users sometimes have a vested interest in their own data and their own privacy. Germany has ordered Google to stop the human review of voice recordings from Google Assistant or Google Home, I guess it's called. So that has also happened. Unrelated to Apple suspending this seems like a completely separate piece of data, but I'm trying to find who it actually
is. Everything, like,
it's
interesting.
Where did it go? The Data Protection Authority is using GDPR, which everybody remembers from having to opt into everybody's information. I think last year, 2 years ago. After having gone through that, Google has to stop what it's doing with human review. So now they are saying that other privacy groups should be looking at this as well with regards to Amazon and Apple, who also make voice assistants. So we'll see how that continues to evolve. But like, you know, as of right now, Apple isn't doing that. You know, as we said, the program is currently paused or, you know, suspended, like it's on hold. So if it does come back, it'll have to be something really obvious. And I don't think they're going to be able to do it until they've got that switch rolled out to everybody, that toggle for opting in.
Right. There's an interesting dilemma that goes on here too that just gets me thinking about that. Either people are super confident in the current capabilities of AI, or like they don't really care as much as they say about their voice assistants getting better. Mm-hmm. Because like the reason this grading exists and the reason that Apple and Amazon and Google and Microsoft, they're all doing this and they're all using humans because they want to make these systems better, because people constantly complain that these systems need to be better.
Right.
And AI, as much as they use it, and they use a ton of it, like the majority of this stuff is analyzed by AI, as far as I understand.
Yeah.
But AI is just not that advanced yet, and it has to be trained. And the way you train AI is you have humans train it, yeah. Right? So, like, if you want your voice assistants to get better, you actually want these companies doing this stuff because this is how it gets better.
Right.
So there's that interesting dichotomy that people have.
You know, I think part of the issue you're describing, Adam, is putting things into context.
Right.
Nuances of human language, double entendres, positional
accents is huge.
Your location specific nuance of the meaning of what you say.
Yep.
All these things are things that computers are struggling with.
Mm-hmm. And even you know, like when I think about, you know, some of the basic information that I ask her for, because I generally don't use her to retrieve information. I'm generally using it like send a text or send a reminder, set a reminder, things like that. Yeah. That's usually what I'm asking her to do. So when I ask her for stuff, like, you know, it used to be that in order to get her to give me a score of a ball game, I would have to ask her very specifically. And I would have to say, for example, the score of the Portland Trailblazers NBA game.
Right.
And now I could say
context.
The Trailblazers game. And I don't have to say Portland, and I don't have to say NBA, and she knows what I'm talking about. And if I ask her about the Mariners, I can just ask her what's the Mariners record, and she can tell me. And I need to know that once in a while because my dad likes to talk to me about baseball even though I don't watch it. So I need to keep like mildly aware of what the Mariners are up to. And yes, I know they haven't been the same since Ichiro left. I look forward to your letters. But The thing about it, Adam, that you're talking about is that trade, you know, and the thing that I would wonder about all of these people who are howling about this privacy stuff, the first thing I want to ask all of them is, how long have you been on Facebook?
Right.
So,
yeah. You're totally right.
But it's the amount of trade, you know, like,
right.
You know, if you want your computer to be 100% secure, you never, ever connect it to the internet, and you never, ever put a flash drive in it. And you never, ever, there are risks that you have to be willing to take in order to do that. You know, you are assuming a certain amount of risk by walking out of your house. You are assuming a certain amount of risk by staying in your house and getting out of bed. You are assuming a certain amount of risk when you do everything every day. And, you know, sometimes it's a very small amount of risk because you just walk out the door. Sometimes it's a slightly larger amount of risk, say, walking out into the road. And those are different amounts of risk, and people have to decide what's appropriate for them. And I think maybe this just sort of took people by surprise. Like, what do you mean people are listening? And I don't think anybody understands that it's not coming up with, like, all your Apple ID information. And here are a bunch of conversations tied to this Apple ID. Like, that's not what's happening. So
the amazing thing is, like, people don't think about this stuff until they're told about it.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's outrage. So that's the interesting thing to me. It's like, well, you didn't even stop to think about this, you know, signing into Facebook, or what's Facebook doing with all this data, or what are all these voice assistants doing with all this data, till somebody told you, oh, they're doing bad things.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
And
now we're outraged. So what's great about these stories, in my opinion, is it starts to flip that, right? It starts to get people to think about, hey, yeah, you know that dialogue box that comes up and it says some stuff about privacy? Maybe read it next time, right? Like, you didn't read it last time and look what happened. So let's all pay a little more attention and take a little more responsibility for our own protection. And like you're saying, decide what level of risk am I willing to accept when I'm... Mm-hmm. loading this app. You know, it comes down to everything in our modern world now, right? Advertising, yeah, and all these other things. So I think these are ultimately good for, these stories are great for that reason. And it's great that, you know, Apple as a company is really driving this to the forefront. And I think they're the only ones who really are, which is interesting. Like, you don't see Facebook, you know, or Google very often. They're starting to a little bit, but you don't see them out in front saying, here are the things that we're trying to do to protect your privacy and give you more control.
Yeah, exactly. And you know, one of the things, like, I'm kind of always willing to cut Apple a little more slack because I know that my data is not Apple's business model.
Right.
Like, that, I know that's not what Apple wants it for. So for me, it's always a little easier to kind of not really forgive, but cut them slack for something like this. Like, I always sort of figured at some point, you know, again, I'm not, you know, like, I'm not people. You know, like, I stopped and thought, like, somebody has to be listening to this at some point. Not everything, but at least a sampling here and there, and being able to, you know, in order to be able to tune. And so for me, it was never that big a deal when it came to Apple doing it. You know, but there's a reason I don't have a Google Assistant in my house, for example.
I think another reason Apple suspended it was because it's probably wise to do so, sniffing that it's possibility of one of those classic class action lawsuits was coming soon.
Yeah.
People get bent out of shape, and as soon as Apple seems to be misbehaving, somebody's all too willing to file a lawsuit.
That's true, because there is another class action against the slowing down phones thing that's trying to come in. So we'll have to see. Now, we only have a few minutes left, but John, I did want to get a very quick update from you on the MacBook saga.
Okay, so this is part of my four-part series, which I concluded yesterday, a very personal MacBook Pro disaster. And in part four, the conclusion, I talked about receiving a repaired MacBook Pro 2018 model from Apple, working perfectly now, and then discovering that a Otherworld Computing Thunderbolt dock that we had was itself defective. And I outlined the variable isolation testing process that we went through to determine that now the dock was defective, and we had to return that, and what we had to go through, and some brilliant customer service from Otherworld Computing. Everybody knows Otherworld Computing is great.
Yes.
But I just reiterated it, and I got some fabulous customer support from them. And what they did was they bench tested a replacement dock before they sent it to me, pulled it off the shelf, certified it, shipped it to me. That took an extra day, so I got it in 2 days, and it was perfect. So the upshot was and what Otherworld Computing told me was is that for a MacBook, which doesn't have Thunderbolt, their USB-C docks work fine, but they really recommended the Thunderbolt dock with the MacBook Airs and the MacBook Pros, which have Thunderbolt, even though you don't connect a Thunderbolt device. It's just, they work better.
Okay.
And I don't have any technical details to go into on that except what they told me.
Okay.
So we upgraded from, even though I had a USB-C dock on my MacBook, it turned out to be a Thunderbolt 3 dock was better for the 2018 MacBook Pro.
Okay.
And it's working gloriously. And we've got DisplayPort connected to it. And we've got USB-C drives. And we've got USB-A thumb drives. And we've got keyboards and trackballs and everything connected to this port. And it's just glorious.
So this is now, this saga is at an end, is what I'm hearing.
It's at an end. And I finished up with some lessons, not learned, but reiterated. And the key, I think, is when you have a problem like this, is to take extensive written notes.
Yes.
Do A-B testing and write down the results of all your tests. It's a hard thing to do. It takes a lot of patience. Mm-hmm. Fortunately, my spouse has that kind of patience, and she wrote pages and pages of documentation. And when we showed him to the Apple rep at the Apple store about what was wrong with the MacBook, he looked at it and he said, yep, you know what you're doing. He scanned the 2 pages of technical analysis and notes and said, okay, we're going to ship it in for a repair. Mm-hmm. So there was no fussing and no questioning of our sanity or our technical expertise, because we had documented everything. So that's a very hard thing to do, but I highly recommend it. So that's the upshot.
Yeah. I'm not always detailed, but I do take pretty quick notes, at least, of like, this is what I tried. And, And I have up front said to support people, like, I'm a very technical person. I'm just going to keep throwing information at you until you tell me to stop. But here's everything I did. And then, you know, I'm off to the races. And that, yep, we're good. You know, you can stop. Yeah, that's all the stuff we would have done. That's usually music to my ears. Like, you did all the stuff we would have done. Now we have to actually, like, figure out what's going on. So I had that recently. Adam, how about you?
I was just going to say, I can tell you the one step when I'm having, you know, really crippling problems where, like, I just can't get something figured out, either on an iOS device or a Mac. The one step that I always do, and I know people hate to hear this because it's a giant pain in the butt, but I can tell you every time when I go back into the Apple Store, they almost immediately, or I think every time, have immediately just checked it in and said, yes, you have a problem, reinstalling your operating system. They always want you to do that. Yeah. And if you haven't, sometimes they'll send you away. It's a giant pain in the butt, but that step rules out, like, hey, this is something, just, you know, the operating system went wonky or something like that. Mm-hmm. And so almost every time they don't even question it. They're like, oh, you reinstalled the OS. Yeah, it's still exhibiting the problem. We can see it. Yep. We'll fix it.
Mm-hmm. And that is so, getting easier. Like, yeah, it's time consuming now. But with the recovery volume and the amount of impact it does to the other stuff on your computer, that's gotten a lot smaller over time. Like, it used to be a Herculean undertaking, and now it's, you know, fired off when you leave for lunch, and when you come back, it's probably done. And, you know, all your user data is going to be intact, all that kind of stuff. This is where John wants to jump in and give a shout out to Carbon Copy Cloner.
You should pull it back up anyway. I was going to say that you should have, you know, you need to pull it back up before you take it in anyway. So it's like, pull your backups, you know, double backups, and then just reinstall the OS.
Yeah. It's always that. And yeah, like Adam said, that's usually what they will ask you for at the Apple Store. And it, and like I said, it's better than it used to be, because it used to be just a massive undertaking. You had to go locate a disk. Let's, you know, or disks, if you remember having to go back to floppies, which I do. And so now, like, you know, you boot from the recovery volume, you're like, yeah, lay down a new copy of the OS. And usually, like, that process takes a while, but it's pretty hands off, and you don't have to do a bunch, like, in the middle of that, you know, and you will have to walk through, like, the new setup, you know, before you get into your user account, and everything there will be the same. You know, my desktop will be a complete disaster, and I'll have like 97 text files everywhere, and it'll be fine. But and that is going to get even easier, you know, as we've talked about on the show, with a read-only system volume, you know, blowing that away is going to make even less of an impact on the things that you're trying to do. So that'll be even better going forward. I think that'll do it. I definitely recommend going and reading John's story. Because, you know, as you know, the saga is at an end, but getting some good information out of that is always nice. And yes, shout out to Otherworld Computing, because they are fantastic.
Carbon Copy Cloner and Apple Retail Stores Repair Process.
And also definitely Carbon Copy Cloner. Yeah. And apparently that's it. It's time for something. And so we have to go. This has actually been a really fun conversation. Adam, thank you so much for coming by. I'd like to have you more often in the future.
You're welcome.
And John, thanks so much for being here.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me. Sorry about the bell.
I wasn't going to say anything, John. I've been your host, Kelly Gamont. I hope you all have an awesome weekend. I will talk to you Monday. In the meantime, be excellent to each other.